There is no commitment at all, even though PSNH owns two coal-fired power plants in New Hampshire and is part of the Northern Pass corporate entity. No commitments to displace real dirty energy. So we would say that essentially there is a greenwashing going on when this project is being billed as a clean, green, renewable energy project.
And that's Tom Irwin from the Conservation Law Foundation, the New Hampshire director, talking in Deerfield last week about the Northern Pass project and what the project would mean for the town of Deerfield. And Bulldog Live was there covering the panelists, which we shared with you a lot of the audio from the meeting last week. And again, you can go to my website, briantilton.com, click on the Northern Pass page so you can hear all of it in case you haven't done so already. But one of the issues that came up, and one of the panelists that was there, Jack Savage from the Society of Protection of New Hampshire Forests, was there talking about the issue of existing rights of way. And if you are one of those people that got the landowner newsletter from Northern Pass, actually they infer that you own Northern Pass land. Isn't that cute? But that's why they call it the Northern Pass Landowner Newsletter. we've already talked about that one a long time ago, why that may not be an accurate statement. Yeah, I said that to one of our listeners who sent me one of those newsletters who said, oh, gee, you know, look at this. And I said, well, isn't it nice that you own Northern Pass land? That didn't set well with them. I said, well, that's what they're saying. But anyway, Jack Savage joins us here. He is well-rested, recovered, I think, from the Boston Marathon.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay. You know, we're still recovering a little bit. What a wild scene it was down there Monday.
I bet it was. The big headline was how warm it was.
Absolutely. And you know what? They were right. The newspapers got it right. The liberal media got that one right, Brian.
You mean a forecaster finally got the weather right? I mean,
well,
that just never happens.
Too. Yeah. So here, you have to admit that the Boston Globe got something right. Can you admit that? Can we hear you say that?
Yes, they got that one right. The Boston Globe got it right. You know, I used to read that newspaper
a lot, really?
Too. Okay. Yeah, I did. Always, and I enjoyed it, too. Yeah. I just haven't picked one up in the last couple of years. So yeah. That's all, for just force of habit.
No, actually, it was a wonderful day. The crowds down in Boston are so supportive. My colleagues at work have been so supportive, and my friends and neighbors and community has been so supportive of this whole effort. I was out raising money to fight ocular melanoma research, and the most important thing was we blew away our fundraising goal on that, and I finished the marathon, and it's all good.
Wow. So I know the big headline talking about that was 4,000 people dropped out of the race before it even got started.
Right.
Which, because they were heeding the warnings if they weren't accustomed to it. And this is probably, the warmest year they've had for the marathon. But you told me something during the break that a lot of people finished it.
Sure. 96% of the people who started finished it, which may be a little clue as to the mindset of runners. We're either a little bit nuts or just very, very determined. And if you get if you get a chance to run the Boston Marathon, you are just not going to quit. It takes a lot of effort to get there, and once you are there, you're determined to finish. We didn't set any record times, some of us, especially those of us in the back of the pack, but we finished, and that's what was important to us.
Yeah, I was watching the TV, watching the lead runners, and I didn't see you there.
No, I wasn't up among the Kenyans. No, you would have missed me there. You would have had to wait a long time, actually, before I came by.
But good. I mean,
I think they were showing reruns by the time I came across the finish line.
But you raised some money, which
I did, for a
good cause.
I did,
and
yes.
That's
important.
I
was part of Team Pioneer, and 54 different runners raising money for Mass Eye and Ear's different programs, in my case, for research to fight ocular melanoma.
And that is a great facility there, too. My mother received treatments there.
Did you?
For cancer in the eye many years ago. And you know, she still goes back twice a year.
That's great.
For a
That's
checkup, just to make sure. So they do very good work. So glad you're able to do that.
Right.
So let's get to the other issue at hand here, Northern Pass.
Right, yeah. It's, that battle continues. It's very interesting to see how it's progressing. We're getting some signals that up north in Canada, they're a little less interested in pursuing the project. One never knows what's really going on behind the veiled corporate veiled curtain. But certainly the Northern Pass partners, NU and NSTAR and PSNH, are determined to try to make it happen if they can, because it represents a lot of dollars in their pockets.
Yep, and they have not deviated despite all the outcry a year ago. It was a year ago in March when we had the public scoping comments by the Department of Energy, the public scoping meetings held throughout the state. And so many people kept talking about alternatives, whether they be burying the lines along state-owned right-of-ways like, you know, the interstates and other corridors. But it seems like Northern Pass folks have not even entertain that thought in the least bit. They're still insistent on going down the existing rights of way, quote-quote, that PSNH owns.
Right, and they've attempted to sort of make it as if the opposition to this project was all in the North Country, all in those 40 miles that they would need to acquire new rights of way in order to get to the Canadian border. But in fact, there were far more people between Groveton and Franklin and Franklin and Deerfield who live on land over which PSNH owns some sort of right-of-way, currently now being used for distribution lines. And that's the ironic thing, is there are actually more people. They're a little bit more colorful up north, but there's actually more people from Groveton to Deerfield who object to this thing because they already know what they're living with. Mm-hmm. And so they don't have to imagine what this is going to be. They know very well it's going to be, and they don't want it. And PSNH and Northern Pass have made the presumption that there would be no question as to whether they would be able to essentially lease out a private transmission line on those so-called existing rights of ways. And I think that's a bit of a leap at this point, that hasn't necessarily been determined. And the Forest Society, since we own some of that land, we own the Rocks Estate up in Bethlehem, and there's over a mile of existing right of way that crosses that land. It's 265 feet wide, more or less. And so we've engaged Ransmeyer and Spellman here in Concord to explore what opportunities we might have to challenge that supposition that those existing rights of ways could be used for this private transmission line.
Yeah, and as we look at this, the issues started, a lot of questions started being raised in my mind as much as a year ago. When you start looking at the easements that are written on the property deeds, and it seems from what I've been able to see, especially the ones that date back to the 1940s, when they were trying to electrify the North Country, running the lines up through there, that was the purpose of it. It seems that depending upon where you are, every deed is a little different, it seems. But there may be some height restrictions on the poles that are there. There may be definitions of permissible uses of that right of way. And when you look at some of the more modern easements on these deeds, they tend to be a little more open ended. So I think that's where some of the legal issues may need to be explored.
Yeah, and I think every landowner needs to take a look at the right of way that the deed to the right of way that does cross their land and understand exactly what it says, and and make up their own minds. One of the things going on here is trying to determine what's a reasonable use of that right of way. PSNH owns the right to do something there. In most cases, they are doing something there. They have poles and wires that have electricity running across them, and they would appear to have the right to do that. So when does a new proposal become an unreasonable use? What, for example, if between Franklin and Deerfield, where this will be high voltage AC, because as you know, Brian, the DC power will be converted to AC in Franklin if this project were to go forward, and then go as high voltage AC from Franklin to Deerfield, where it would go into the grid. What if that goes within 10 feet of your house or 20 feet of your house or 30 feet of your house, where before any poles or power lines had been 100 feet from your house? Is that a reasonable use of that right-of-way? Is it reasonable to expect a landowner to put up with that? Was that ever envisioned when the right-of-way was granted? And if not, do they have the right to do it anyway? One of the miscalculations I think PSNH in particular has made, and the whole team around Northern Pass has made, was treating this project as if it was a public utility project from the start. That's what they're used to doing. That's what they set out to do. But this is not a public utility project. This is a private transmission line meant to allow Hydro-Québec, a Crown Corporation of Canada, to deliver power to its own U.S. subsidiary. And as such, I think the rules are different. And we saw that be meaningful once we got to the eminent domain question. It's very clear that Northern Pass came into this project presuming that there was no question that if they needed to, they could apply to the PUC for the use of eminent domain to achieve their objectives. It's now been pretty well established that they're not going to be able to do that. And that's precisely because of the type of project they are, a participant-funded project. Mm-hmm. So now what does that mean in terms of use of the existing rights of way? Are the rules the same? Well, that's what we're exploring and looking at our options to determine. And I think we might have a chance of making the case that given the nature of this project, there's a pretty field of pretty fresh fallen snow legally on what may be a reasonable use of these rights of way.
Jack Savage joining us from the Society for Protection of New Hampshire Forest, 1-866-823-1077. Well, let me pose this question here. PSNH apparently owns these rights of way, and I wonder how they were purchased, how they were acquired to begin with, and were they done? Was that done so with ratepayer money in order to, for a specific purpose of supplying electricity from one part of the state to another? And then you're going to hire have a private corporation come in and start using that for PSNH to rent out, and then they pocket all the money. And what do we get out of it?
Right. Well, that's a very interesting question. It's all about who has the ability to monetize that capital asset. Mm-hmm. How did that capital asset, to the extent that you can make money off of it, come into the hands of PSNH? Was it put in the rate base and essentially was it ratepayer money? And so if PSNH were to derive revenue from monetizing that asset, where should it go? Should it go into the shareholders of Northeast Utilities who owns PSNH, or should it go back to reduce the cost of electricity to the ratepayers, or those payments go back to the ratepayers? They're very good at making us pay for stranded costs.
Yeah.
One could make a logical argument that they ought to be equally good at having ratepayers benefit when you're able to actually make money off of an old capital asset.
Put a credit line on our PSNH bill that says cost recovery with a little minus sign over there
go.
So it shows the credit.
Right. So that may be one outcome of what we're taking a look at. You know, perhaps the issue—
Not that makes a project any better.
No.
But we're just saying
no,
for that
but
purpose.
It's what we're trying to do is make this a fair process. And to date, this has been anything but a fair process. This is— much like people calling up and trying to say that they're raising money for Chief Maloney when, in fact, they're doing no such thing.
Right.
They're talking about this as being green power, and it's there's no guarantee that it would be any such thing.
Right, as Tom Irwin was pointing out from the Conservation Law Foundation as well. What an interesting meeting last week in Deerfield.
Yeah, I know you were there, Brian, and mm-hmm. It was. And it shows this ongoing strength of the opposition. You know, Deerfield is one of those communities that, if this project were built, might get a little bit more tax revenue based on some increased infrastructure around the substation than some other communities. And that's made them move more slowly in terms of analyzing what the benefits and detriments of this proposed project would be. And I think that's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. What they've discovered, and they discovered early on by doing probably the most thorough analysis of the tax implications, is that the projections coming from Northern Pass were way off base. I think you probably remember better than I, but what Northern Pass was saying was double what any tax benefits might be.
Right. That was one of the first questions. The Northern Pass Advisory Committee for the Board of Selectmen, that was one of the issues they came up with. And despite their best efforts to get more information from the Northern Pass folks, they just weren't getting it to justify how they came up with those inflated numbers. But one of the other issues that came up, too, and in a minute or two that we have remaining here, the that one of the issues that came up from a lot of people, and every time I've been to Deerfield covering this topic, selectmen's meeting, community meetings like was held last week, the people who live near that substation already, that where they just went underwent some expansion projects, a lot of complaints about that, too.
Yeah, it wasn't that interesting. Just something, quite frankly, I hadn't considered before. But I guess it's not all that pleasant living around a substation.
No.
It's something that people of Franklin might want to pay attention to, that along with any purported tax benefits might come from some quality of life issues, especially if you own land or a house near the facility that they would build there.
Well, one farmer told me a year ago when I was in Franklin covering another event, he said to me, he says, I've got power lines running through my property. And I'll tell you, my property taxes haven't gone down any. He says, I still pay taxes on that land. I still own that land.
Right.
And
yeah.
I'm responsible for it.
Right.
So there you go.
And he would probably, as a farmer, like to make certain uses of it. And there were a number of, you may remember, there were some farmers up in the Haverhill area when the DOE hearing was up there a year ago that talked about the impact of those overhead DC lines on their cow herd and so forth. There's lots of concerns. Think of that as in terms of a reasonable use. There's a lot of concern about the EMF from those high-voltage AC lines that would be running from Franklin to Deerfield and the extent to which they might cause health problems. So is it a reasonable use that a right-of-way would suddenly create a health hazard in your own backyard in cases within 50 feet of your house? I would argue that it's not reasonable at all. And as such, no entity should have the right to come in and create that situation without the underlying landowner having a say.
All right. Well, Jack Savage, I got to run here. Thank you very much for joining us. By the way, one last comment on the Balsams Conservation Easement. The donors are being thanked in this month's edition of Forest Notes.
That's right. That was such a remarkable campaign, and so many people helped us that we decided to put the name of every donor who wished to be named anyway, there's a few anonymous ones, in the current edition of Forest Notes. And I'm very proud to have all those 1,700-plus people in our magazine.
All right. ForestSociety.org is the website for the Society for Protection of New Hampshire Forests. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Brian. Thanks a lot.